In 2022, Nigeria struggled with multiple challenges, including insecurity, economic difficulty, and an unprecedented flood disaster. The violence in the Northwest continued to be a significant concern. For example, over 1,000 people were killed in the first quarter of 2022, surpassing other regions, including the war-ravaged Northeast, according to data released from the National Security Tracker. In March, dozens of people were kidnapped on board a passenger train moving between the capital, Abuja, and the northwestern state of Kaduna. The attack led to the suspension of the train service for months, and while several hostages were in captivity. The threat from the Islamic State West African province continued to expand into several frontiers outside the epicenter of the violence in the Northeast, where the Boko Haram insurgency had been ravaging for over a decade. The expansion led to travel advisory by several Western governments in October, and an elevation of a threat level for the capital. This was an unprecedented action. The flood that ravaged many parts of Nigeria in the year also led to over 600 deaths, and over 3 million people were affected. Many were displaced. These events were some of the major crisis events that happened in the year. Hello, welcome to The Crisis Room, a podcast from Human Angle. I am Murtala Abdullahi. In this podcast, we look at crisis trends across the country and answer the top questions around them. This week, I'm here with my colleague, Kunle Adebajo, the head of investigation at Human Angle, and Kabir Adamu, the founder and executive director of Bacon Consulting Limited, a security consulting firm based in Abuja, Nigeria. Hello, welcome to the Human Angle podcast.
Thank you so much, Murtala. I'm really delighted to be back with you and speaking on our favorite topic, security.
Hi, Murtala. It's good to be here.
Yeah, well, I see your colleague is an in-house person, so he's always here. Looking at the year, a lot of things happen, and so I want to start with you. What's your assessment of the year 2020 in terms of the trends that have occurred?
Murtala, is that for me or for?
Yeah, I'm starting with you. So I just wanted, in terms of your assessment, was like the what did you observe in terms of the trend in the year?
Okay, you've ruled out the major security incidents that have occurred, and for me, giving it a broad overview, I would say it's more or less the same old story. In other words, the issues that we are familiar with, sadly, issues around fatalities, number of persons that are being killed, is more or less what repeated itself. So if we look at the numbers, last year, 2021, we were talking, depending on what data set you look at, around 9,000 persons being killed in the country. And this is just from security incidents, not just safety. Now, for this year, we're looking at above 10,000. So unfortunately, despite the huge investment by the government, and we must admit that the government invested massively in security, perhaps in the course of our conversation, we speak about that, but we know that the government invested in the acquisition of platforms for almost all the military units. We also know that in the area of intelligence, the Falcon Eye, as an example, has become more operational. The synergy between the various components within the intelligence community has become a little bit more effective than it used to be. And the result is the several security operations that have led to the arrest, and in fact, in some instances, the killing of some of the major criminal gangs, commanders that are in the country. In spite of all of that, we have seen an increase. Now, it's easy to point a finger to the fact that this is a pre-election year. And as it's common in almost all parts of the world, a pre-election year precipitates the triggers of violence. And so it can be explained that part of the reason why we've seen the dynamics around insecurity to become more active in 2022 it's perhaps because of this. But there are also several other reasons. You are aware that the National Bureau of Statistics just released the multidimensional poverty index, which was a collation of data and analysis, I think, 2019 to 2021. And it indicated clearly that over 133 million Nigerians, are below this multidimensional poverty line. And all of these are some of the triggers of insecurity. So yes, quite an interesting year from a point of view of security. The traditional issues that have allowed insecurity to thrive in Nigeria, unfortunately, are still untouched. And I'll quickly mention some of them. Security sector governance. We are yet to see an improvement in security sector governance. All the issues that you mentioned, the major ones, the attack on the train, Kaduna-bound train, the Kuje prison incident, and name them. Not a single person from within the security sector has been held accountable. And clearly that is a function of security sector governance. The fact that several of our laws either remain moribund or not applicable in the current day circumstance is also one of the issues that has remained and which is driving insecurity. The lack of synergy, even though some would argue that it's an improvement, but I think it's still a major fact element within the security sector. We've seen an increase in the number of council meetings that are being held, but there is no commensurate increase, for instance, in, I'm talking of the Security Council, which is the highest body of security gathering within the country. But there are other councils, such as the Police Council, that we've not seen sitting as regularly as it should. So the security sector governance remains a huge issue. Just as it has always remained within the country.
Yeah.
So all of these are the issues I'm looking at when I'm reviewing 2021.
Yeah, it's quite a full pack when, as you were explaining, you have, like, for example, certain progress in certain axes and then a lot of steps backward and so on. You have issues around security sector governance, as you also mentioned, in terms of improvement in acquisition and capabilities and all that. But however, there's also been unprecedented spread of violence in the country. And so I'm going to the human angle aspect, and I'm going to get... So when we just had the data in terms of the number of casualties recorded both last year and this year, and how there's going to be an increase, we're talking about almost 10,000 people, depending on the data set that you see. So Kule, you have spoken to a lot of people who have been directly impacted by this violence, and you did same last year. And what did you measure in terms of the field work that you were doing around this event this year?
Well, just as Doctor was speaking, I was running the numbers to check in what the Nigeria Security Tracker is currently saying. And you see that as of like mid-December, over 8,000 fatalities have been recorded this year. And a lot of those were civilians. And you also find that hundreds of security personnel have also lost their lives due to security incidents across Nigeria. And you see some recent different trends too. For example, even though the jazz section of Boko Haram has been dealt a great blow as a result of ISRAP's expansion, you find that there are still remnant elements that are, conducting kidnappings, abductions in Maiduguri. And a lot of the displaced persons usually complain to us that, they would kidnap women and farmers and demand hundreds of thousands of naira in ransom before they are released. And sometimes they will say, hey, do not tell ISWAP that we are here, because they are also afraid of, getting attacked and killed in the process. So it's the same for Ansaru too. You see that Ansaru is also being more, even though Ansaru used to be the black sheep of the jihadi community, now it's becoming more expressive. It's becoming bolder, and it's also trying to gain more territorial influence, even coming out to say people should not participate in the electoral processes and all that. So there's still no signal, so to say, that the multiple insurgencies that this country is facing are on their way to resolution. Unfortunately, I mean, we have a president who also said that he has done his best when it comes to insecurity, and all Nigerians can do now is to just pray. It's very unfortunate also because, you know, when there was re-election in 2015, when the incumbent needed reasons to say, hey, bring me back to office, you notice that there was an improvement in security at that time. But now the current president is ending his two terms in office, and there's basically no incentive for him to say, bring me back. So he's just waiting, bidding his time, waiting to leave office and leave all the problems to his successor, which is a bit unfortunate.
Well, it's quite tough when you hear these. And something Kunle was really highlighting in terms of the mutation of most of these threats that we have, whether in terms of what is the Islamic State West African province has become in terms of expansion into the North Central, and also how Ansar has become more bold DC than it has in several years. So we've spoken a lot in terms of the active form of conflict and threats to human security. We'll go into the other component in terms of the year. The economic conditions was quite difficult for a lot of people, and we a lot of our scholars will say economic situations also shape the human security in a level of the country. We also had the flooding that occurred. And so I just want to get your take in terms of the economic and environmental security component, Doctor.
Okay, thank you very much. Even though that's not my forte, but I will make a few comments on that field. So as an example, the consequence of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, we all know that it was occasioned on the 24th of February. And since then, the entire global market, especially the energy market, has been turned upside down. Everything from petroleum down to all the other products, diesel, aviation fuel, have been affected. The supply chain is so bad that if as a business operator, if you had budgeted, for instance, at the beginning of the year, 300 naira per liter for diesel, what you ended up buying it, and I think it's still the case, is about 700 to 800 naira. For aviation fuel, I think it's about from the 300 naira per liter to about 1,000 naira per liter. Those are significant consequences on the business line. Then even the lack of reliance in terms of the supply chain, issues. You can't rely, as an example, on the age-old and established supply chain line. So that makes the business environment quite difficult. Most businesses would have to seek alternative means. And unfortunately, the alternative means are not affordable, as it were. So the 2022 business environment was quite tough from that prism. Inflation was also another huge issue, which to an extent, like I said, I'm not an expert in that field, may be related to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but it may also be related to government policies. The last, I think, inflation figures released spoke about 21%, if I'm right. So I think the entire year ranged from around 17% to around 21%. We're fortunate because one of our neighboring countries, which is Ghana, has figures reeling to almost about 50-something percent. And, that was like a crisis. We've been in a recession. We came out of it almost, immediately. So the business environment kind of adjusted to that. But on the whole, I think this impact on planning is what makes the Nigerian business environment quite difficult. As a business person, you find it extremely difficult to plan, ahead over a period as a result of the consequence of some of these things that I've mentioned. So from my point of view, as a non-expert, as a layman, from that point of view, who is able to make the link between, economic issues and security, I would say 2022. Remained a very fertile ground from an economic point of view, for the various issues that are the drivers of insecurity. And I'll quickly mention them. The impact of all of these things I've mentioned, the Russian inflation, invasion of Ukraine, the government policies, inflation, have been an increase in the unemployment statistics that we're looking at. The last count, I think, is around 60 to 70%. And the youths are the pool from which all the non-state actors that drive insecurity recruit from. So clearly, there is a positive relation between the economic indices that we're discussing and insecurity, unfortunately, in the country. So clearly, economic issues are not helping, as it were, the government efforts to address insecurity. And this became manifest in 2022.
Yeah, and kind of like interesting when you look at the conversation around the global security trend outside the country and how that affect Nigeria. You have the conversation around energy security. And I think that was something that the president had also highlighted during the COP27 in his opinion piece with Washington Post, where he talked about Nigeria's energy security concern, the transition and all that. So it's quite a delicate and complicated conversation, but whether we like it or not, this thing shapes both our economic and energy security. So I'm heading back to Kunle and going to ask you one last thing in terms of the year. What other thing did you observe in terms of the trend this year?
Generally speaking?
Yeah.
I mean, you might have to be a bit more specific.
Yeah, so we have so many stuff that have happened over the year, as we were mentioning, but which one of them actually stand out for you? Some people say the Kujeje break was really, it was the peak of all coming into the capital and conducting such an audacious raid. And so what did you that really stood out for you in terms of the trends that happened? Was it the flooding or something?
Oh, well, so, I mean, there's I guess little that can be done when it comes to natural disasters, yeah, but the ones that we have a lot more power over, the question is, what are we doing about them? I'm residing in Trademore Estate, the notorious place where bombs were discovered or reportedly discovered. Until today, I still see CJTF personnel parading the estate and its environs, right? And you still sometimes they would check the boots when cars are entering, and they never did that before. So you could still see that even though the news has been quiet on that issue and there've been no scandals recently, there's still that level of tension and fear that is in the community and across Abuja, because nobody knows when the next attack is going to take place, and we all know it's unlikely that all the new sleeper cells have been addressed by the authorities. So I think that's the highlight, the fact that this is no longer a northeastern problem, it's become a nationwide problem. And there's also concerns about upcoming elections and whether it's going to give ginger to these groups to want to make a statement, to want to establish their authorities. I think the train attack was also a major event, but the wider implications when it comes to transportation. So you find that, I mean, every class of society is affected, and maybe the only place that is secure now is water transportation. But even if you go to the Crete in South, they would very much disagree. So, Nigerians are taking blows left, right and center, and you see that it's also influencing the jackpot trend, right? And I think one way that the economy is also kind of impacting the security climate is also, you know, how health practitioners and other essential workers are looking to move to other countries. So even when attacks are taking place, how do you make sure that emergency responses and people get attended to when they are eventually taken to the various health facilities? So the problems are just like poverty, multidimensional.
I think the last word that you said in terms of being multidimensional, that's the word. And also you mentioned something in terms of it's really difficult now to see you have an escape from the chaos in terms of the security chaos across the country. So whether in terms of you flowing good transport, even water transport in some parts of Nigeria is quite challenging, especially in the creeks of the Niger Delta. In other areas, you have issues around lack of safety. We have boats capsizing and other things. So you also have people trying to flee the country because of the security situation and also the economic insecurity stressors of that nature. And so you, both of you have mentioned something, the elections, and how the elections have shaped and or may have shaped some of the events that we have seen. And heading towards 2023, the conversation in general was supposed to look at what has happened in 2022 and the outlook for 2023. And the election is kind of plays a key role there. And so, Doctor, I'm coming back to you in terms of election security. We're heading to 2023. The election is the most significant event for now that we know heading towards the year, and then maybe later on some other things. And so we'll start with the election. So what's like the measurement of the temperature heading towards elections, and what is it that we can do to ensure that it's done, election security is a top priority?
So thank you very much. I mean, if you asked me the measurement, if I'm going to use temperature and centigrade, I would say it's almost about the boiling point, which is about 100 degrees centigrade. And that's because some indices are clearly indicating lack of compliance with the provisions of... so you recall that the National Peace Committee did sign an accord with the political parties for compliance with the Electoral Act, in terms of you know, all those issues around hate, negative mobilization, incitement, and all that, and of course opening up the political space to allow for free campaigning and all that. Unfortunately, almost all of that has been jettisoned by the political class. At the last count, from the database of Beacon Consulting, we've recorded serious incidents of political violence in 21 states, you know, so far. There have also been targeted killing of politicians, the most recent being a candidate of the Labour Party in the Southeast. This is apart from several violent incidents targeting political activities. So clearly, a very heated temperature ahead of the election. But there are some positives, and I'll start with INEC itself, which is the electoral management body. We've seen an improvement in its capabilities for election security management. It has an election risk management tool that it uses, and that tool, from our standpoint, is quite robust. It is a tool that has been used across the world, and INEC adopted it. It has a department that is responsible for the implementations of the provisions or the compliance with the provisions of that tool. In other words, that tool helps this department to identify internal and external risks. And once these internal and external risks are identified, then of course it's logical that they will be mitigated. The challenge, however, is that not all risks are security risks. So most of the other operational risks are quite effectively being managed by INEC. The security risk, unfortunately, there is a lacuna there. And the lacuna is embedded in both the constitutional mandate that INEC has been given, as well as the Electoral Act. And that is that INEC has no security operatives. INEC is reliant on an ad hoc committee. And this is one of the messaging that we've been trying to put out. That committee is ad hoc. It is the Interagency Consultative Committee on Election Security. It is ad hoc. And I think there is a need to allow INEC to take ownership of the risk. Now, this is a little bit technical. And what do I mean by taking ownership of the risk? Taking ownership of the risk would mean the moment INEC identifies the risk, evaluates it, INEC should have the power, and this is the word, to address that risk. Now, INEC, as it stands from its mandate, does not have the power to mitigate security-related risks. And a good example are the attacks on INEC facilities. So far, INEC, between 2021 and now, has recorded 50 attacks on its facilities. Now, I am not aware of any agency in government that can withstand 50 attack, physical attack, and still be operational. Now, that is the type of resilience that INEC has been able to build. It has recorded these 50 attacks, yet is still able to function. But there has been a warning by the INEC chair that if these attacks continue, it will not be able to deliver on its mandate. And the chairman has rightly advised that we should stop these attacks. Now, the challenge, based on the current mandate, INEC does not have the capacity on its own to stop this attack. It has to rely on this ad hoc committee. And because it does not have the power to instruct this ad hoc committee, and this is an issue that has been debated severally. I remember in the 2011 elections, 2015 elections and 2019 elections, this issue came up. And I would explain it simply. It's not as simple as that. The way I'm going to explain it, it's more complex. Every year, the various members of this committee, let me use the police and the military as an example, INEC would sometimes subtly ask them to provide their deployment plan for the elections. A simple example is provide their deployment plan for protecting INEC facilities that are being attacked. These agencies will never do that because they would not subject themselves to a civilian oversight, as an example. So this is what I mean by INEC should be given the powers to own the risk. In other words, when it comes to election duties, INEC should have the authority to demand in a very transparent manner the deployment plan and some of the other plans by these organizations to manage the identified risk. And for INEC to do that, it means it has to increase the capacity of both its risk management and the security department. In fact, I'll go a step further to say I would like to see a convergence between the security department and the enterprise risk management unit of INEC, so that once there is an identification of the risk, the security department would be able to liaise with the security agencies in an authoritative manner to manage those risks. Currently, we're speaking about the attacks on INEC facilities, but we're not seeing a commensurate action to mitigate those attacks. We know what the problem is. What we're not seeing is enough action to manage the problem.
A lot of insight you've shared in terms of how INEC could help, what the government can do to help INEC mitigate some of the risks, including strengthening the institutional framework that allows INEC to have more authority or oversight over its own security as we head towards the election. The temperature is high, and as you also highlighted, a lot of INEC facilities have been targeted, especially in the southeast, where we have the separatist crisis ongoing. In other areas, the concern is about the ability of INEC officials to have access to areas where elections will hold, or like in the northeast or northwest, due to activities of AMGUS. So, Kule, I'm coming back to you. And in terms of your outlook for 2023, Doctor has mentioned the election security. What's your outlook for the?
Well, yeah, I mean, Doctor is absolutely right. INEC is quite vulnerable to attacks, as it's been obvious. A lot of those attacks took place early in the morning, I think sometimes during the weekend, and it was very easy for them to, you know, set the buildings ablaze. It's difficult for them to do anything without the support of the security agencies. And as we all know, Nigeria's armed forces are overstretched, and they are deployed across nearly all the 36 states in Nigeria. And the polling units, INEC just last year added over 50,000 new polling units to its current database, making the total over like 170,000+. And that's so many places that need attention during the elections, general elections. And, you know, with violent incidents taking place in the northwest, north central region, northeast, and across the country, the question is, how many security personnel do we even have to have one eye on current flashpoints of insecurity and, you know, potential flashpoints of violence during the elections? So it's going to be difficult. And I just think in the build up to that, there should be some sort of dialogue also with the non-state actors to at least minimize in violence as much as possible you find that when the Anambra gubernatorial elections took place last year, I think we heard that some INEC ad hoc staff even resigned because IPOB was threatening that there would be chaos and violence and that it would not allow the elections to be held and all that. So, and even though IPOB has taking on the more pacifist stance, I guess there's still the very belligerent and aggressive autopilot that is also building on steam every new week, and there's always casualties every week. So it's a lot to handle, and again, it's difficult to see how there's going to be, you know, an incident-free elections. But I think one area that should be prioritized is, you know, the candidates themselves at least should not make the matters worse. If non-state actors are doing their thing, at least politicians should also not escalate the issues through ethnic bigotry, spreading hate speech and all that. And if people are found to the assassinations that have taken place, for example, there was also a woman leader of Labour Party that was killed in Kaduna State, which had obvious political undertone. So incidents like that should not go without proper investigations and without, you know, people being brought to book to face the music if they are found guilty, just so that, you know, repeat incidents do not take place.
Yeah, it's a lot to handle. It's a lot, really, when you look at it, what's happening across the country. So, Doctor, any final words as we come towards the end of the conversation?
Yeah, thank you. I would just want to emphasize the issues around the core drivers of insecurity and how hoping that the candidates who are vying for our votes, most of them, especially the, you know, the major three or four, depending on what you want to go with, have released their manifesto. We've reviewed their manifesto. And sadly, most of them are not talking about these core issues. We've talked about security sector governance, and we've talked about the need for, you know, accountability within the security sector. I think this is something that I'm hoping to see, you know, especially in the next government that would be in place as from May 2023. I'm also hoping to see some reforms within the electoral, you know, space. As an example, I think there's a need for an electoral offences tribunal, or rather commission, that would take up electoral offences and ensure the prosecution of, like Kule mentioned, several offences have been committed, and unfortunately we're not seeing those persons, perpetrators, being punished. And then lastly, I'm hoping to see more, as it were, discretion from Nigerians. We're not participants, we're players, we're victims. Frankly, a significant number of the security challenges that are occurring by Nigerians. If I'm going to give a percentage, I would say about 95% of the offenses and criminal activities that happened and that are happening are by Nigerians. So these are not ghosts. They are people living side by side with us. And we should not pretend that we don't have a role to play. We have a role to play, not just in helping security agencies stop these things, but from also contributing actively from preventing these occurrences. One simple way is by the common parlance: see something, say something. We should learn to be civic citizens and provide this type of information, irrespective of the consequence and whether or not the security agencies use it. Let's continue doing our civic rules, and eventually, hopefully, the Nigerian space would be a more conducive place for us to live and do our businesses. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kule. Any last words?
Well, there's a lot to say. The elections are really interesting, also because of the level of desperation. Not one candidate has had their eye on the presidential villa for many decades, so they are just willing to do whatever it takes to get there. And I hope that the incumbent president would also not take sides, as he has assured us that he would, and make the elections free and fair, and whoever wins free and fair is, you know, sworn into office at the end of the day without incident. I also think insecurity is not rocket science per se. It might look at like, but we know the solutions, they are obvious. We need more surveillance. We need to centralize our data system. I don't know why it's taking so many years for us to have a central database that connects to acts of criminality, that connects to tax clearance, that connects to elections, that connects to work history and employment. I don't know why it's taken so many years. It's just, it's mind-boggling. I think that's one thing that needs to be addressed. There's also the issue of transparency. When there's embezzlement, when $2.1 billion suddenly disappears when it was meant for arms procurement and heads are not rolling, there have been allegations against former army chiefs and nobody is hearing about update about those allegations.
By the heads are not rolling, technically...
Well, yes, the heads themselves.
Yeah.
And so if that impunity continues to happen and people continue to benefit from insecurity, even people within the state agencies, then it's not unreasonable to expect that the insecurity will continue to take place. So we also saw some improvements this year with the deployment of armed personnel in the Northwest, and even the locals said, oh, they saw improvements in security. So we all know that if, you know, there's increased intelligence-driven air bombardment, if there's ground forces deployed in strategic places, we would see improvements. So if we are just consistent with those efforts, I'm sure, and also take care of the foundation, like I mentioned, things will take place.
It's been an interesting conversation, getting a lot of insight, and it's really, really clear that there needs to be fundamental changes, whether in terms of security sector governance, transparency, accountability, addressing the key stressors of insecurity, building up the capacity, both in terms of institutional capacity and the legal framework that allows us to mitigate some of these risks that we saw in 2022 and have a more secure 2023, and what needs to be done to de-escalate the tension as we head towards the elections in the first quarter of next year. So thank you very much, Joctor. We look forward to having you on subsequent episodes of the podcast next year.
My pleasure. Thank you so much too. And ahead of the holiday, I wish you all a very good holiday and look forward to interacting with you in 2023.
Thank you. Thank you, Kunle, also for sharing.
We wish you the same, Doctor. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So thank you, Kunle. And yeah, thank you everyone for listening to us all through the year. This is an episode of Human Angle Crisis Room. Join us next year in 2023 for new episodes, new conversation and dialogues with experts, specialists and journalists. The producer for this podcast is Antonia Semota and the executive producer is Ahmed Salkida.